Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, I have a great guest. We're going to be talking about a lot of different kinds of emotions. Her name is Betsy Thompson, and she has written a book called Walking Through Illusions. And so, Betsy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nancy. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. So, Betsy, before we talk about your book, because it's pretty interesting, let's talk a little bit about Betsy, who Betsy is, where she came from, and why, because you've written several other books. Why write these kind of books?
Well, I guess I'd have to go back to the age of five to really explain that, because my mother was always telling me how much I looked like her grandmother, and my mother was obviously mad about this woman and thought she was terrific, and she had died a couple of days before I was born. And even at five, I was having trouble getting along with my mother, so I thought the fact that I looked like somebody she really loved was a definite plus, and I thought, well, you know, I talked to her to get to know her better, and I didn't tell anybody I was going to do this, so nobody told me I couldn't do it. And I had these lovely conversations with my great-grandmother, her name is Mamam, for about a couple weeks, and I was enjoying them, and I thought, well, you know, I guess if I can do this, everybody can do this. And so I said to my sister, I told her I was talking to Mamam, and I said, who do you talk to? And she looked at me like I was crazy, and it was very traumatic. I mean, she must have been really upset, because she teased me unmercifully about it for weeks, and I stopped doing it because I was scared to death she would tell somebody else what I was doing, and they would react the way she did. And so I put it aside. And it wasn't until the middle of my life, when things were not going too well in the picture of life. I was in a one-room apartment in Los Angeles. Was without a job. I was temping to survive and not doing very well. And I had been spending most of my life blaming other people for my problems. And I started doing the Course in Miracles, and it was all for me about taking responsibility. And so one of the things I decided to take responsibility for, besides all the mess my life was in, was this fact that I could talk with spirit. And I decided that I would use the gift, and I remember saying a prayer one night that I wanted to use it. I wanted to share what I heard. I wanted to honor the gift. But I needed a job to support me while I did it. And 3 weeks later, I had the job that I had for the next 18 years in the entertainment business that supported me while I wrote all my books. And so that's how it all began.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I agree, you know, there are a lot of people who have, you know, that everybody has it, but there are a few people who actually, you know that they have it, like you talking with your grandmother who'd crossed over.
Yeah.
I think everybody has that ability, but I do think that a lot of people are afraid, just like you as a child, to mention anything, especially after what you went through, and then have that tendency to shut it all down because first they don't want to be strange, weird, or crazy, and what do you know, and why can't I do it, and, you know, all those questions.
Right, right.
So,
And I it was really, you know, I had gotten to the dregs of life for myself. I've been through two marriages and divorces, and I was on a spiritual path, but the picture had disintegrated to really just barely surviving. I was almost homeless, actually, and I think it took me getting to that point where I was finally saying, well, what do I have to lose at this point? I can't lose anymore. I might as well see what happens if I honor it. And it was almost as if the universe said to me at that point, you know, well, if you're ready, we're ready, and here we go. Because it was like a complete turnaround after I decided that I would honor the gift.
Mm-hmm. It's really important that people do that. And again, I think they're kind of afraid. Mine started when I was six, but I started hearing voices after a freak accident. But they protected me, Betsy. They wouldn't let me talk to other people because they didn't apparently want me to shut anything down. So they just kept giving me information, and they told me when I should do things and when I shouldn't do things to help me through. You know, like, you know a lot of things, but you can't let anybody know just now. I knew when people were going to die, and they would say, it's not your concern. It's already been chosen. They decided what they wanted a long time ago. They're going to a better place. You have to let it be. You know, so they encouraged me through my entire life, which was kind of neat because most people, they don't get that kind of encouragement. They get all the other stuff, like, you know, thinking everybody can see or hear or touch, or, you know, their emotions come out, and they're talking to people or they know things in advance. And so I was pretty much protected when I grew up, which I thank them for actually every day.
You know? That's wonderful, yeah. I think it's just, I agree with you that everybody has a psychic ability, and some people just develop it more, And I think that each of us knows what we need to go through in order to honor it. And so it's very individual, always very individual, and I love that it is.
Well, it is. It needs to be, because if everybody was on the same track, do you know how boring it would be?
Yeah, I know. Pretty bad.
It would be really bad. And no one would really, I don't think, have the opportunity to really learn, because we actually need each other to learn. And I don't know if people understand that, especially, Betsy, when you look around the world today and you see all these wars going on, all the greed going on, and all these people, you know, only doing for themselves. And it's like there's a lot of lessons here to be learned. And some people are going to learn them, and, of course, some people are not during this lifetime. But it just, you know, it has to be done. One thing I always talk about on the show with people like yourself is one of the questions I ask them is, why do you think so many people have such a hard time, you know, knowing what love is, or following through with love, or allowing love to come to them?
Yeah.
So what do you think the reason for that is?
I think it is because you have to give love to get love. I think we live in a perfectly balanced universe where whatever emotion we put out into the universe, we get back. And so we cannot expect to receive something we are not willing to give. And I think it comes down to that, the bottom line. I think the cosmos in its perfect balance shows us exactly how we live our lives. If it didn't stay in balance, it would disintegrate and there would be chaos. And our lives are the same way. And we are always in balance, whether we realize it or not. And if we don't like the balance, then we need to look at ourselves and ask ourselves, what are we putting out there that we are attracting back that we don't like? Because then you put yourself in this position of power of saying, okay, I'm the one who has created this by what I have expressed out there. So if I want to create something else, I need to express something else. And so I think that, there is a lot of stuff happening in the world, but I truly believe that you create the universe of your own universe around you, and you feel what you have made others feel. So if you are putting out, if you are treating other people the way you want to be treated, then you're not going to have too many hang-ups. I mean, that was my problem for the first half of my life, really, was that I was spending all my time blaming other people, and then, of course, I was attracting people back to me who were blaming me for all their problems. And so it was finally when I became responsible and said, well, gee, if I created this mess, then I can jolly well create something else. It was at that point that I turned things around, because I said that I'm the one who has to create something else. And I think until you do that, you feel like you're powerless. You feel like you're the victim. You're at the effect of all the other people around you, and you can't change anything. But when you say, I am the one who created this, so therefore I can create something else, you take charge of your life.
Which I think is true. And what I find, because I've been doing intuitive life coaching for about 39 years, and one of the biggest hang-ups that most people have, you know, that it's over and repeated, you know, multitude of times, is that they do think that it's somebody else's fault. And then, you know, I have to stop them in the middle of their sentence and say, no, who really created it? You know, where were you in this whole play? You know, did you allow it? Did you want it? Did you send it out? Did you bring it back? You know, look at those things. And a lot of people have a very hard time looking at that, Betsy, because it's
right.
Like, oh, you mean I got to take responsibility? And if I take responsibility, means I have to do something to change that.
Yeah.
And I think the world in general, because of that responsibility thing, has gotten very lazy. And they're not taking the responsibility to make the changes from their heart. See, because everybody wants to live in logic. And I'm another firm believer, just like you, that all comes from the heart and all comes from love. And I think the sooner people get back to their heart, instead of looking at, well, how much money do I have? Who am I going to have to screw up today in order to get what I want? And the I stuff, you know, it's not going to change for them. So I think you're right when you say, you know, whatever I created, I can recreate.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any suggestions, Betsy, for people who have created, let's say, certain things in their life, and just in general, it doesn't have to be anything in particular, but just a way to recreate it so that it's not the same old year after year after year?
Well, I can give it a personal experience of what happened to me that is a perfect example of how you attract back energy to yourself that is just like you. When I first started hearing these ideas, they were changing my life in a big way. And I thought, you know, I had this attitude that, well, the ideas are working for me, they should work for everybody. And so I was kind of, my attitude was kind of, well, if you don't get this, what's the matter with you? And so I had this person in my life where I was working, and she was very patronizing toward me and was really getting to me every day. And I was in this job, and I wanted to keep the job. I didn't want to leave the job, and so I had to deal with it. And I came home one day, and I said, okay, Betsy, now it's time to put your money where your mouth is. What is this person making you feel? And so I made a list. I wrote down all the feelings that she's making me feel inadequate, or like I couldn't handle the job, like I wasn't smart enough for the job, that I wasn't this, I wasn't that, all this negative stuff I was feeling because of her. And so I said, okay, so who am I making feel that way? And as soon as I asked that question of myself, I realized immediately what I was doing, that I had this attitude that, you know, my ideas were the right ideas, and if people didn't get it, there was something wrong with them. And so once I realized that I was the one who was responsible for being so bothered by this person in my life, I was able to change my attitude and say, and come to the, and really realize that people have the ideas they need at every stage of their life, and who am I to say they have the wrong ideas? And so I also had a friend who was going through a traumatic time at that particular moment in my life. And she would call me and tell me the things she wanted to do, and she had all these ideas about how she would change her life. And every time she called me with a suggestion, I would poo-poo her idea and then tell her what I thought she should do, as if I knew, you know. And so I realized what was going on and why I was so bothered by this woman, because I was putting out the same kind of energy she was putting back toward me. So then it put me in the position of power of changing that. And this is what I always say: when something's going wrong around you, it isn't about changing the other person, because we can't change other people. They have their own path, and who are we to say they should change? I mean, they'll change when they jolly well want to. We're the ones who need to change our attitude. And so I did. I realized that I took the attitude that people have the ideas they need, and when they need a new idea, they'll find it, and they don't need me to tell them what they should be thinking. And as I did that, what happened was that she stayed in my life. And she stayed the same that she ever always was, but she didn't bother me anymore. It was this, I had this aura around me, and my aura represented everything I was putting out there. So when ideas came back to me that I hadn't put out there, they just sort of bounced right off my aura. And I could say to myself, oh, there she goes again, but there was no impact on my heart. And so this is what I'm talking about when I say that, you know, you create your world by what you put out there, because if ideas and feelings come back at you, or people's negativity comes back to you, and you haven't been putting it out, It isn't going to make that hole, that horrible empty feeling in your heart, that impact on your heart. You're just going to notice it, but it isn't going to impact you, because you do have this wonderful light around you, and it does protect you in a way in that it doesn't let ideas in that you haven't expressed. And so that's what I would say.
Yeah, and it's very good. You know, a lot of people, they just want to stay and what I call that pity party box. And yeah, it doesn't matter, you know, what's good going on in their life. They can't see it because they're so caught up in that pity party part of their life. And it's like, well, maybe take just a toe and stick it out of that pity party box.
Yeah.
Maybe see, you know, what the feeling is. If it feels a little better out there than in that box, then stick another toe or a foot or a leg or whatever until you're totally out of it again. You know, it works really well for a lot of people, because it's like, oh, I didn't know it's going to feel like that. And it's like, well, just, you know, relax, kind of do your thing. Now, you've written several books, so let's go back to the first book. It was called Love Parent, How to Be the Parent You Hope to Be.
Right.
Now, from reading, you know, your book I have, Walking Through Illusions, there are certain reasons why you write books the way you write them. Type of books that they are. So let's talk about that one first. What prompted you to do that one?
Well, this was the first book I wrote, and I was talking with my friend, and I was thinking about what I was going to do with this gift. And she was going through some parenting issues, and I had had some parenting issues too, because I had German measles with my first child, and he was born with a lot of physical problems. And so I had a lot of questions to ask too. Granted, he wasn't a child anymore when I acknowledged this gift, but I had questions about it. And so I asked Spirit if we could write this book about parenting, and this is what resulted. And I had no idea what would result. I had no idea it would cover so much of, you know, so many chapters and so many phases of the upbringing. But that's the book that resulted, and it was more about the idea of how Spirit plans the journey, and before it gets here. It knows what it knows the growth it needs. It knows whether it should be male or female. It knows whether it should be on Earth or another planet or another solar system. It knows what it needs because it is while it is spirit, it is part of the whole of love, and in the whole of love, all knowledge is understood and known. So it knows exactly what it needs, and it plans its journey. And so it takes the book, the point of view from spirit and what spirit wants to find once it gets here and the lessons that it wants to go through and how we as parents need to respect what our children need to go through and honor their journey as their journey and not the journey that we want them to have necessarily.
That's kind of neat. Now, that particular book is on Kindle, so people can get it on Kindle. It's called Love Parents.
Yes.
And then the next year, because it's really funny because you wrote three books all with, you know, within a year. A lot of people can't do that. So your next book was called Love Human, and then it was subtitled How to Be Who You Love. A lot of people don't know who they are, and they don't know how to love who they are, but they'd rather love something else that they see. So maybe explain that one a little bit, too.
Well, it's the idea of how to be who you love is to that same idea of putting out the feelings that you want to get back. And this book is... those books, all the books that I self-published, the first four books, are out of print now. And this one I hope to get up on ebooks, but it's not up there now. So I'd sort of rather talk about the books that are out there because I can't really, I don't want to talk about the books that people get a hold of because that would be kind of, disappointing, but for them. But, so I hope to get that book out there. It's just, it's like a sequel to, Love Parent, and it's a more about, the idea of remembering how valuable and how godly we all are, actually. We all have the love of God and the energy of God in us, and we can all get in touch with it. It is a potential for everyone, and so it's not just for special people here and there. We all have this wonderful energy inside of us, but it is up to us to acknowledge it, recognize it, and use it.
I hope you get that one out, because I think a lot of people, especially right now, can really use that information from you, Betsy. Then you wrote, and we're going to go through just a couple more, because your books are very interesting, and I want people to know what's out there. The What Happens If I book, that one sounds pretty intriguing. How to Make Action-Reaction Work for You. A lot of people don't understand that action-reaction, so can you explain the action-reaction part?
Well, in other words, you know, you can call action reaction cause and effect. You can call it the mirror theory. You can call it the law of attraction, which is a very popular name for it now. But it is the pulling of energy back to ourself. In other words, we are like energy finds like energy. Oil and water don't mix. Love and cruelty don't mix. So if you're one way, you're not going to attract people who are the other way. For when people come to me and they say they want to find their soulmate, I say, well, okay, take a piece of paper, write down all the qualities you want this soulmate to have. You want them to be kind and considerate. You want them to be respectful, whatever. Write down all the things you want them to be. And I said, and now you must start giving those qualities to other people, because if you don't, this wonderful ideal person that you're talking about is going to be out there finding other people who are like he is. They're not going to be finding you if you are not that way. So you must be the person you want the other person to be. And this doesn't mean just in relationships. This means in friendships, and this means with your children. This means with everyone in your life. You must be the person you want other people to be. And so it's about that, you know, action-reaction means that you cannot expect to receive something from another person that you are not willing to give to that person emotionally. I'm not talking about things in the illusion. I'm talking about things in it from our heart. You must be the person you want to attract back to you. That's the only way it's going to happen.
Again, it's very true. Now, let's talk about the one that you just got out. It's called Walking Through Illusions. Jesus speaks of the people who shared his journey, which is pretty interesting because I don't know if people, you know, maybe think or thought about the other people that also had some impact on Jesus versus Jesus having an impact on them. So this book apparently was mostly channeled to you. Is that true?
Yes, it's all channeled. All my stuff is channeled.
Okay.
Yeah.
This one especially, because you go into topics here that a lot of people they'd like to talk about, but they don't want to get in arguments about. You know, which is really what it amounts to. But let's kind of, you know, go through the book a little bit. You know, what prompted you to write this book?
Well, I've always been curious about Jesus. I was raised Episcopalian, but I hadn't been in the church for years, having left it rather disillusioned. And the only thing I really knew was what I had learned in Sunday school. And so where I wasn't really interested in religions anymore, I was still very curious about Jesus. And I wanted to know, you know, I was thinking I have this gift and I have these questions, so why don't I use these questions to ask Jesus what the heck, you know, what was really true and what was really not true. And so that's how it began. I just started asking questions, and I really didn't know it was going to be a book, let alone three books, which it has turned into. But I just started asking questions, writing the answers down. And this is what this is how the book developed. I just was curious, and I've always been very curious. And curiosity has sometimes gotten me in trouble. This time it didn't. But I remember thinking a lot of times when I was getting the answers, oh my God, is that really the answer? You know, I truly trust that answer because it wasn't always the thing. It wasn't what I'd been taught. A lot of it wasn't what I'd been taught as a child, and so it felt kind of daring to me at times. But that's what it is. I just started asking questions, and then this is what happened. And I feel like I didn't really know what was going to happen. I didn't, you know, when I ask a question, I have no idea what the answer is going to be. I didn't know how many chapters it would be, how it would come out, and I didn't know it would be in the format that it's in. So it's all, I feel like I'm a vehicle, and I'm allowing the artist to perform through me, and that seems to be the way it works for me.
Which is actually the best, because otherwise you probably won't have as good as channeling as you thought if you try to let ego get in the way.
You know, yeah.
That's a good way. So let's go through this book a little bit. There are 17 chapters in it, and each chapter has a title, and each title usually equates to a person that, you know, was in his life. And you started off with Bartholomew. So when you were doing the channelings and you were getting this information from Jesus, and he talked about people, you also related all of your personal experiences with who he talked about. So do you think that was probably kind of a, let's say, a put-up job so that you could learn a little bit more for your life?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that, yes, my writing has been my education. It's been my my inspiration. It's turned my life around. It's inspired me to in every way. I mean, it's the most incredible gift I feel I've ever could have ever received. And came to this point where I honored this gift, I felt like I didn't have to ask people anymore to try to inspire me, that I was finding this wonderful inspiration within myself. And I learned everything that are in these books. You know, I went through everything, all the emotions that are in this book, I went through all of them. That's where all the questions came from. I had gone through these things. I had all these things happen to me. And that's why I have that page at the end of each chapter where I talk about the ideas in the chapter and how they impacted my life and what I went through. And I wanted to do that because I wanted the reader to know that, you know, I'm on the same path everyone else is, and I've gone through all this stuff too, and I'm coming out the other side, and everybody can do that. Everybody can do what one can do, all can do, and that's what I hear from Jesus all the time, what one person can do, all can do emotionally in their life. And so it's been very inspiring for me, I feel like this is what I came here to do, to go through what I had to go through to be able to write this book and to be able to share the ideas, and I feel that this was my life purpose.
You have a lot of quotes in your book. One of them, where the first chapter for Reform, it says, in all little things you relish are all the big things that matter. Where did those kind of quotes come from, Betsy?
They all come from Jesus. They all come. Yeah.
You know, because they make a lot of sense, but I'm not so sure that a lot of people will get it right away. They'll probably have to read it a couple times, you know, just to see how it sets with them, to be honest. I mean, because I liked all the quotes. I thought they were pretty kind of cool. But there are, I think some people may go, I don't know about that. But I think if they just read through the book and they really follow it exactly the way that it's meant to read, they'll find it as interesting as I did. I like the part of you putting in all your personal insights, because you actually compared yourself to each of the people that were in that chapter. So would you mind kind of giving a little insight to how Bartholomew and you were kind of alike and then not alike?
Well, I mean, I was always, the first half of my life was always thinking that I had to reform, you know, the people around me. they were the ones that needed to change. Everybody else had to change except me. You know, and I thought my life couldn't change. My life couldn't get any better until other people were behaving differently. So, yeah, I mean, that was the first half of my life, really. It certainly wasn't that pleasant to end up almost homeless. But that's where it took me, and I think I had to get there. But I mean, we can't. No matter how much we want people to change, you know, why should they change for us? That's the real question. Why should other people change for us? And they're on their own journey. They'll change when it jolly well suits them to change. We're the ones who need to change. You know, if we want things to be different, we're the ones who need to change. And I think Bartholomew spent a lot of time thinking that everybody around him had to reform. His parents had to reform. His father had to reform. They all had to change for his life to get better. And he had to come to the realization that that wasn't going to happen. And it wasn't supposed to happen. That isn't the way it works.
Which I think is real important. So we're going to kind of go through each little chapter here. And in a table of contents, you have each chapter broken down. And the first one was reform. It says, where does reform begin? Which you just answered. The next one says gifts. What qualifies as a gift? You know, a lot of people assume, Betsy, that a gift means they're going to get something that they really want, or it just means getting money or, you know, something. So really, what does qualify as a gift?
Well, the idea behind this chapter is that if something comes to you in the illusion, or what I call the illusion is whatever you see, hear, taste, smell, and touch. And if something comes to you through the illusion in the matter world, it only means as much as the love that comes with it. If somebody gives you a gift begrudgingly, it doesn't even feel comfortable to accept it when you feel that person is begrudgingly giving it to you. It doesn't feel like a gift at all. It feels like somehow it's kind of some kind of a slap in your face when they give you something that they give it to you begrudgingly. So a gift that you give to another is only as precious as the love that comes with it. And that's what the idea is, because the reality of our lives is the love that we are able to feel. That's what's real, because for something to be real, it has to be real whether we are in form or we are out of form. And the only thing that's real both places is love, or our emotions. And so you have to give with the feeling behind it is what really makes an impact on the other person.
Very well done. The other part is obstacles. You have a chapter on obstacles. You know, some people look at obstacles as it's a way to straighten them up, or they look at obstacles as something that they're never going to get past, or they look at obstacles as maybe this is going to make me stronger once I conquer it. So why this chapter?
Well, this chapter is about the idea that we often think, and I certainly did think for a long time, that what was holding me back were things that I saw with my eyes in the picture of life, that I couldn't do this because something was happening in the picture here, or I couldn't do that because something else was happening in the picture here, or that person wasn't doing what they were supposed to be doing, or this person wasn't giving me what I was supposed to be getting. Those kinds of things that we think are the obstacles holding us back, when the obstacles holding us back really have to do with our own emotion, our own emotional blocks that we can't get through. And so that's what we need to look at when we think we're stagnant and we can't grow and everybody's holding us back. That's where the illusion is. That's where the ego is. That's where there are no answers in that kind of an attitude, in that kind of a viewpoint. The answers come from thinking that I'm the one who has to get through this emotional block I have and work through it, and that's when change comes.
Yeah, and obstacles, to me, actually makes you stronger as you get through them, and it makes you really like yourself and respect yourself more because you did it instead of just walking away and going, oh, forget it, you know, it'll be there, whatever. You know, because a lot of people have that kind of an attitude. It's like, oh, just forget it. It's just too hard. I'm not going to do it. And they miss out on a lot, I believe. Now, then the next chapter was called Morality. And
yeah.
A lot of people, if you look at today's world, Betsy, I don't know if they know what it means, what it doesn't mean, but we're kind of like in a little mess right now. So maybe just explain that a little bit, too.
Yeah. Well, it's the idea of morality has to be, something has to be moral 2,000 years ago, 2,000 years in the future, as well as today, to be really a moral idea. because you have to have an idea that's going to work any time in history, any planet you're on, any solar system you live in. For something to be moral, it has to be moral in all those situations. And it's the idea that, and I think the definition of morality changes, because it changes according to the needs of the human race along the way. So what was moral 2,000 years ago and isn't moral today isn't going to hold up as a universal morality. So one time it was moral for the head of a tribe to conquer another tribe and eat those people to survive. That isn't considered moral today, but at one time the person who was able to save his tribe that way was considered to be the moralist of all people. So you have to ask yourself, what makes sense? I know one thing that I think that we're lost sight of in the world today is common sense. You know, what makes sense? Because I think common sense is the love of God within each of us, and I think that somehow we've gotten away from that idea that, you know, what does this idea make sense to you? You know, that's you have to ask yourself, you know. And then, so, you know, moral, you must live the morality that you want to receive. It's that same old idea. If you want people to be honest around you, then you have to be an honest person, because that's the only way you're going to attract them back to you. But if you think it's okay to steal and rob and to be to act amorally all the time, well, you're not going to get moral people back to you. They're not going to find you. They're following their energy is not going to be compatible with your energy. So live the morality you want to find in other people.
Again, that's very good. You also talk about nourishment, but you equate it with support in your chapter. How did that come about?
Well, I think that there's a lot of this feeling that if I behave a certain way, or if I'll take the side that I think God takes, and I'll be okay. You know, a lot of that comes through religion. In that they believe that if they do a certain thing, that God's going to favor them. But I think that what really happens is God doesn't take sides. God reflects the side you take. So you have to ask yourself, you know, what kind of support, what kind of people, the same idea that you want to receive. What kind of support do you want to receive from other people? You want people to support you emotionally? Do you want people to support you financially? I mean, if you think it's important, if you think your important support is to be supported financially, then give a little money to some other people. I mean, and also, if you don't have any money, then give your heart to other people, because if you give to other people in a way that makes your light shine brighter, then the universe is going to send back to you what you need. It may not be money. It may be something else. But you can trust that the universe understands your life, and the universe knows what you do need, and so that it will give you what you need if you are giving other people what they need. And so that's nourishment is the idea that we really aren't here to nourish our egos. We're here to nourish our souls and our hearts. And so that's what we're going to be fed. And the idea, you know, we're talking about the idea of obstacles before. Obstacles, I believe, that we set up our own obstacles, because that's the growth we're ready for. That's the nourishment we're ready for. We're ready to overcome that obstacle, because if we weren't ready, we wouldn't have that challenge. So our soul knows exactly what we need to live while we're here, and it is always setting up those obstacles and challenges for us. And when we see the love in the situation, we walk right through the challenge, because that's the only reason that we have a challenge in the first place, to find love where love was not found before. So once you find the love, you walk through the illusion, you walk through the obstacle, and you move on to the next thing you need to learn more love in, or the next thing that needs more of your love.
You have two quotes during that chapter that were really good, and I'm going to read both of them. One says, action-reaction is a little like badminton. It isn't the speed which you swat that wins the game. It is the finesse with which you deliver the shot. That's pretty potent right there, okay? Because I don't think people look at that. Yeah. And then the other one is, the soul who looks for support rarely finds it. The soul who offers support always does. Which, again, I think, you know, that what you sow, you shall reap is really a major choice in a lot of people's lives. So, you know, a lot of, like I said, a lot of these quotes here were really, really good, and I really like them. Now, you talk about beliefs, because that's a big question that a lot of people have, Betsy. A lot of people have their own beliefs that, you know, there is no God, or a lot of people have a belief that there is a God, or each religion has a different, quote, belief system that you're supposed to follow. And a lot of people are just discovering the universal love of God. Would you find that to be true?
Well, I've come to believe from the writing that I've done and the messages that I've received that that we don't take our beliefs with us when we leave here anyway. We take the love we found from having them. So I don't. My personal belief is that it doesn't matter what beliefs we have. If we love them, we're on the right track.
Good. Then we come up, I mean, because we're just going to run down this so people kind of understand what they're going to be reading when they get your book.
Okay.
Another one is called opinions. Everybody has one or a few. So why that chapter in this book, Walking Through Illusions?
Well, I think that everybody has opinions that have to do with what's going on in their life right now. I mean, my opinions when I was 20 certainly aren't my opinions now. But whatever my opinion is in the moment, I'm attracting other people to me who have that opinion. So, you know, if you want to, you have to, don't live your life by other people's opinions. You know what you need to live, and don't worry about how other people feel about it or what other people think of what you're doing. Because if you live your life according to other people, you're never going to find that feeling of satisfaction that you're here to find. You have to listen to the heart within yourself, and you have to listen to your instincts and what you are urged to do for yourself, and don't worry about what other people think about it.
Another chapter is approval, which a lot of people are under this very firm thought that they have to be approved. Somebody has to approve them to make it right.
Yeah.
What does that chapter tell people?
Well, it's also about the idea that you can't feel approval until you give approval. And I certainly went through that with my mother. I just couldn't, and it didn't seem like anything I did she approved of. And but you know, at the same time that was happening, there wasn't much about her that I approved of either. So we were probably pretty perfect mirrors of each other.
You know, I think that happens a lot.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it wasn't until I really, middle of my life that I came to the realization that the very fact that we neither of us really approved of the other very much was probably exactly what I needed, because the fact that I couldn't agree with her on anything and she couldn't agree with me on anything was the impetus I needed to get me to seek what did work for me. Her opinion about life and her attitude about life and her priorities were not my priorities. And so I had to, you know, she was a catalyst for me in that she pushed me to find what was my priority. She pushed me to get out there and find what I did believe in and what I didn't believe in. And so she's like, we've been talking about this idea of a challenge and the person who's nourishing you. And now I think back on it and I think of that she's probably the greatest gift in my life, because she was really the one that pushed me to say, you know, this I can't believe, and this I can't deal with, and this doesn't mean anything to me, and this isn't valuable to me. But what is? You know, but what is? So I had to find what was, and so she was really a gift to me.
I think it's important, Betsy, that people ask that question, you know, what is important? You know, what kind of approval do I think I want, you know, versus what kind of approval am I getting, or what kind do I really need? You know, I think people need to start asking themselves questions. Like one thing also, like you said, at the end of each of your chapters, there's like a little question session, which is like a little workbook thing. And it's pretty interesting because when people read through the chapters, it can help them relate to kind of maybe a little bit more who they are. And by asking those questions, you know, it can help them really get to a different part that they need to be at, rather than thinking, for example, that they have to be approved, when in reality, the only approval really has to come from themselves.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And you know, there's nothing more uncomfortable in life than people constantly seeking your approval. That's very draining. And if you are the person who is seeking approval, then you're going to attract those kind of people into your life who are constantly seeking your approval. And so it's the same idea that you have to ask yourself, you know, What is it that you, what does the approval mean to you? Does it mean that people respect you? And if it means that people respect you, then you need to respect other people. You need to give that respect that you want to get back. Because whatever you give to others, you give to yourself, because we are all one. We are all one, even though it looks like we're all separate. It only looks separate in the illusion. In reality, we are all one. So whatever you give to others, you are giving to yourself automatically.
Which is good. People really need to get that one down pat in reality.
Yeah, it's really, that's a hard one to remember, because we have our eyes that we see, and everybody looks separate, living their own separate lives. But it really is true. We are all one, and whatever we give to another part of the whole to which we belong, we give to ourselves.
Good. Now, this is the question that a lot of people ask, and the question is, Betsy, why is life so unfair? So you have a chapter there called Fairness.
Yes. And it, because life is not meant to be fair. Life is meant to be informative. So get over it.
good thing right there.
It's not going to be fair. It's not supposed to be fair. We didn't come here to live a fair life. We came here to live an informative life. And I believe that energy is cannot be created and cannot be destroyed, and therefore our energy has had other experiences, and we come into this experience having lived other experiences, and we have we are here for a reason, and we have the challenges we need, and so those challenges are what we believe, our soul believes, are informative to us. And you can only place any kind of fairness in this world is emotionally, in that whatever you give to others emotionally, you are going to receive emotionally. That's the only fairness that exists. That's the justice of the world. That's the justice of the universe. If you see people going through, for instance, somebody commits murder, and then they get away with it. Well, it may look to you like they're getting away with it, but that's just because you're looking at that in the illusion. Emotionally, they haven't gotten away with anything. And they will go through the same agony and pain they gave to another person, whether they do it this lifetime or another lifetime. That's the emotional justice that is part of the reality of the whole of love. And we don't have to worry if other people are not getting the justice they deserve. We only need to ask ourselves, do we have the justice that we want and we deserve? Because we don't know what other people's paths are. We don't know what they've gone through before they got here. We don't know what they're going to go through after they leave here. It's really none of our business, and it's really frustrating, anger-provoking to think that we can solve those kinds of problems. And we can't. We aren't meant to. We're meant to be here focused on our own lives and how we're living our lives and whether we are creating the kind of life that we want to live. That other kind of stuff, when we're focused on other people, that's what I call ego, keeping us everywhere else but where we need to be.
Yeah, that's one of the things when I do my consultations, people keep saying they want to get even with somebody, and it's like, no, you don't. You really don't. Think about this. You want to get even with them, which means you're going to have to go through it in order to get even with them, too. Do you really want to do that, or do you just want to let them be who they are? Or they're communists. Oh, I want to see them really live in hell. And it's like, well, how do you know they're not?
Is that how you want to talk to yourself? I want to see myself live in hell. Because whatever you're putting on another person, you're just inviting back into your own life.
Yeah, I tell them, remember one thing, folks, whatever you give out, you are definitely going to get back.
Yeah.
So however you want your life to be, become is depending on what you're going to put out. So try to do the positive. Try to put yourself in a position that's going to bring back good, not bad. And it's funny because the title of your book is what I tell people a lot, not walking through illusion. I just tell them they're living in a very illusion as this world as they see it, that they're not seeing it. It's all an illusion, and it's going to change, and it's apt to change, and it will constantly change. And people go, it means illusion. I can feel it. I can touch it. I said, it's really an illusion. You got to understand there's many things that appear to be real that are not.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can only have to ask somebody, 30 years ago, what did your neighborhood look like compared to what it looks like today? Or what did New York look like 30 years ago compared to what it looks like today? Anything that comes and goes or could be here today and gone tomorrow, your house burns down. That's the illusion. You had it one day, the next day you don't. That's the illusion. So you have to ask yourself, what is real? What am I still going to have when I leave here? Well, you're still going to have your emotions. That's what this journey is all about.
A lot of people, not a lot, so many now, but it used to be a lot of people, Betsy, had a hard time believing that there was any kind of reincarnation because according to a lot of the religious teachings, they don't teach that. They teach once you die, you die, but that's not the teaching of Jesus because he's said over and over and over again that the soul never dies.
No, the soul never dies. No, energy cannot be created or destroyed, and we are energy. I mean, if you take our energy away from our bodies, what can it do? Nothing. It crumples to the ground and turns to dust. It is the energy within us that is keeping us alive. It's the energy within us that is making us a vital person. But the energy is going to, the energy that came into our bodies is what made our bodies be able to function. So when it's gone, it travels on and goes on to the next area of growth that it wants to live. And isn't that wonderful? I mean, it's a wonderful thing that we are eternal beings, and we will always be expanding because we are curious beings. We are curious energy.
Yeah, that's also one of your chapters. But you know what I've noticed is that a lot of people are trying to shut down these children today, curiosity that they have, trying to make them learn all these old boring things that the children already know is not really the way it is. So they keep trying to stifle their curiosity, which I think is probably not a good thing.
Well, I think also that you have to trust that if children are exposed to that, then they for some reason believe that it's helpful to their journey in some way. I really do believe that spirit plans the journey and plans the parents, and they know what they're going to be exposed to. I mean, I had a hard time accepting that for myself. I can't imagine that I would willfully have chosen my mother. But, you know, after I looked at it differently and I said to myself, well, you know, if I did, you know, I gave myself the supposition, well, if I did choose her, then why? You know, and after if I allowed myself to have the if I did, then I was able to see how, well, maybe she did help me. You know, maybe she did help me in the way that she was, because it certainly was a catalyst for me.
Mm-hmm. And I think if people, Betsy, look at a lot of different things that they've gone through like that, they would find out that it really is to help them grow, that it is something to, you know, give them some, you know, food for fuel to keep them, you know, on the right track. But people have a really kind of sometimes a hard time looking at thinking there couldn't possibly be any good in this family that came in. And in reality, like you're saying, it's taught you a lot, you know, and
yeah.
You learn it later, maybe not so much when you're a lot younger, but later you do. And as long as you learn it and accept it and go with the flow, it usually can work out much, much better. Now, Betsy, if somebody wants to get your books, Walking Through Illusion, especially this one, how would they go about doing that?
Well, they can go to Amazon, or they can go to my website. It's the first book that comes up on my website, and they can order it through Amazon. And I have the other book, Love Parent. They can get it there, too, on Amazon. And there's another book also, the first book in this trilogy, The Mirror Theory, which is about Jesus and his family. They can also order that on Amazon, and my website is www.betsythompson.com.
Okay, good. Now we're not done yet. I just wanted you to get that out there. We'll get it out there again so people, you know, get it. So when you were writing this book, Betsy, and you were living basically your truth at that time, how did that feel?
Liberating.
Why?
Liberating to be able to, well, it was liberating to be able to hear these ideas. But to tell you the truth, when I first started, which was about 20 years ago, this kind of book wasn't really, or this kind of gift wasn't really acknowledged the way it is today. And I was kind of afraid, to be honest, about who I was. I was still worried that I would be called crazy and I would be judged. And in fact, it wasn't until when I came out with this new book that I came totally out of the closet about it, because in my first book of the trilogy, I was embarrassed to say that I was channeling Jesus, and so I called Jesus Charlie. But now I'm just like totally out of the closet. But it was, well, in the beginning it was hard because people didn't know what it was, you know, and it sounded very strange to them. And I was leery of talking about it. Now I've just, once I admitted that I said to myself, you know, I am who I am. I have to accept who I am if I want other people to accept who I am. And I'll just let the chips fall where they may. And of course, after I did that, and everything opened up completely, and all these opportunities came to talk about the book, and so it's been a great blessing. But it's not always easy to make that leap of faith that everything will be fine if you're completely honest. So,
yeah.
But everything is, because really when you're living your honesty, you're living the love of God. And when you're living the love of God, then you attract all the love of God back to you.
Do you have two other chapters I just want to go over briefly? And one, chapter 15, is hearts. It says, what constitutes a big heart?
Yeah. Well, I think that that's what we're all here to learn. We're all here to understand the bigness of our heart. And I like to tell people that the bigness of our hearts really are so big that they go out into eternity. And it's just about whether we acknowledge it or not, it's still that big. We just have to acknowledge that that we do have this heart that is really just waiting for us to acknowledge and feel it and to go with it. So I really believe this is the story. The chapter was about Caleb, who was in business, and because he wasn't really respectful of his feelings or the feelings of other people, he gave himself a heart attack by the age of 25, and so he had to really come to terms with what it is that he was putting out there. I think that, you know, I truly believe, Nancy, that our bodies are reflecting what we are putting out in the universe towards other people, because it's like a mirror and it comes back and shines right on us. And so our body is this great gift telling us where we are keeping our thoughts and where we are keeping our mind and what we are putting out there. It's telling us about it. So the body is a great gift in that way. And when something happens in our body, it's telling us what our mind is doing. I had this once when I came back from the West Coast to the East Coast, and I started going through all this stuff with, you know, when I came back to family, all the family stuff was coming up again, you know, and I was going through this old grudges and resentments and against someone in my family I felt had done me wrong, so to speak, and that was like festering for about 3 months, and I got this lump in my back. And so I went to Louise Hay's book and I looked up of lumps, and it means holding grudges and resentment. And so I went through this process of releasing the grudgments, the grudges I had and the judgments I had, and remembering the good stuff that had happened because I had had this experience, and the lump went away. So I really think that our body is this gift telling us what we need to work on and what's, you know, where we're off track. And if we listen to the body and we let it help us, it can really lead us where we need to go.
I think the body has a lot to do with all the diseases that are going around today, because a lot of us are in very much of a dis-ease. But
yeah.
People are just waking up to that fact. And unfortunately, the way the media tries to push all these pills on everybody, it's taken people a long time to figure out that it's their own emotions and where their heart is that could possibly be part of the reasons why their health is where it is.
Yeah.
So they all do need to take a big look at that. And a heart, you know, is a main function of our entire body. Without it, we actually don't live. I know they talk about the brain, but the heart is actually where it comes from. And I think it's time that people wake up and start living in their heart again, rather than through whatever else they've been choosing to do. There's another quote that I'm going to read, and this is in the handicapped one, but we're not going to go through that one. But it just says, gracious behavior is giving to others for the sake of your own evolutionary process. That is real important, because, you know, again, I don't think people realize what they do to other people is going to affect them one way or another. And I think it's time that they remember that and wake up and come from where they need to be, which, again, is their heart. The last chapter that you have in your book is called Betrayal. So, and the question for that is, why is betrayal so painful? So let's go over that. We have just about probably 3 or 4 minutes that we can do that in.
Yes, well, that's one that played out in my life quite a bit, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Betrayal. And I decided, you know, right up from my mother through my husband's, I felt that, and then in other ways too, I felt that I was betrayed over and over. But I think that what happened is that I must have been in another lifetime where I was the person who was betraying. And so I wanted to come here to see what it felt like to be betrayed. And until I got it, until I got that really what was going on, that this was about me and not the other person, I kept getting betrayed again and again. Once I really realized it was about me and not the other person, the betrayal stopped completely, and there was no more betrayal in my life. So I think that when we betray other people, we are only really betraying ourselves, because, you know, what you give to other people, you get back. So a person who says that she really wanted revenge, well, does she want revenge taken on her? Because that's the way it works. And if you can't, the old, back to the old idea, you can't receive what you aren't willing to give. So if what you're the only thing you're willing to give is betrayal, then you can expect it to come back like the boomerang, you know, twice as strong, because that's how it works when we put stuff out there. It goes out, turns around, comes back to us with the added force of physics. And so we need to ask ourselves, you know, what do we want in our life? You know, if we don't want revenge and we don't want betrayal, then we can't be giving that. And there are many little betrayals we live in life that we don't think are important, you know, just like talking about a friend behind their back, repeating a rumor when we don't know it's true. That's a betrayal. Somebody is out there at the on the other end of that rumor, and we have to ask ourselves, do I want them out there talking about me that way? Because, you know, we are, whatever we see and hear, it's illusion. It's just the illusion. In the reality, emotion is going out there and impacting people. They may not know where that emotion is coming from, but they feel it. You can just be with a person, and you know by the way they are treating you and talking to you how they really feel about you. And people know how you feel about them. You may not say it in words, but they can feel it nevertheless. And so, feelings are out there. You can't hide them. You could try to hide behind them, but you aren't fooling anybody but yourself. So that's what, you know, betrayal is. You have to ask yourself, you can only betray yourself. You can't really betray other people. You just betray yourself.
Which is very true. There's a few more chapters that you have, and we're not going to go through them. Just name them real quick. After the betrayal is the identities, hatred, memories, confusion, and then death, which are all process of living and growth. And one other quote is, no one uses you in your lifetime. You use your lifetime to enlighten yourself. I think that's real important for people to understand.
Yes, I like that quote myself.
Okay, Betsy, give out your website one more time for the listeners, and the name of your book and where they can get them.
My website is www.betsythompson.com. And the book is called Walking Through Illusion. And they can go to my website, and from there they can go. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on YouTube, and I have a blog. And all the links are right there on the homepage to all my different sites, and they can order the book from the website, Walking Through Illusion. And I hope they do.
It's actually a very good book, and I really hope they do, too. It should enlighten a lot of people, and it should help them. And, Betsy, our time is actually up. It runs very quickly in an hour, so I'd like to thank you for being on the show. You were a very, very interesting guest, and I think your book was really good, Walking Through Illusions. I think people should read it, work with it, do that little work part, that little workbook part you have at the end of each chapter. They may be surprised at themselves.
Yeah. I've had a lot of positive feedback from that. And the idea is to bring the ideas from the chapter into the reader's life in a meaningful way. And so it's, a lot of people have said that's been a big help. So I hope they read it, too. It helps me, and it's helped other people.
Betsy, you keep up the good writing, all right?
Thank you for having me on your show, Nancy. It's been delightful. I can't believe an hour's gone by.
You're very welcome. And, yeah, unfortunately, it has. But, you know, when you come up with another one, maybe we'll have you on again. So just
wonderful.
Keep that in mind.
I love that.
Okay? All right, Betsy, you have a great week, and thank you for taking the time to being on the
you
show.
You too. Thank you.
You're
Bye-bye.
Welcome. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and look up the book, Walking Through Illusions. It really should be impressive to you to read. So take care, and we'll talk next time. Bye now.